This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wyman and Bob presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. Time is ticking down to Thanksgiving Day. Are you trying to limit your meals until Thanksgiving Day so that way you're really, really hungry? You're pacing yourself.
I thought you were supposed to eat like a bunch of bread and expand your stomach.
Oh, that's fair too.
Yeah, okay. You could do that. I wish that my oven, microwave, kitchen sink, and refrigerator were working properly.
After yesterday, none of that was rectified?
The kitchen sink.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, mostly the refrigerator went TU, and that is just the worst, right?
Well, and you said it's one of those highfalutin expensive ones with all the push-button gadgetry. And
so we had to move it out to a freezer that doesn't have any of that. It has coldest.
Which will last for the next 4 decades.
Yeah, it's like 5 years older than the fancy one, and it's just charging ahead. Anyway,
you and I need to get with an appliance place because my oven is not doing what it's supposed to do either.
Yeah, maybe I'll send my guy over when he gets there.
Yeah,
Do you go to the family big thing? You're not baking a turkey or anything.
I'm not baking anything. Okay. I'm not doing any sort of cooking.
You made something the other day. You told me
scones.
About. Scones.
Right there.
Look at you, man.
Look at that right there.
See how there domesticated is. Bob is.
See, this was only supposed to be in the oven according to the recipe, 15 to 20 minutes. That's an hour.
Something's
going on with the oven.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll be headed to the parents. Lefko's going to come with me. He's going to come to my parents' house.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Bring in the jelly beans.
Oh, man.
I guess I'll just show up.
He's going to bring Thanksgiving jelly beans.
So, Lefko, you got to watch out for this. Stelton always tells me that, like, his dad and me are like kindred spirits. Lots of similarities.
You'll see. Except Dave can hear better than my father can right now.
Not much.
So, yeah, that'll be an interesting day. It'll be fun. It'll be good. Hey, coming up at the top of the hour, Mark Schlereth will join us as he does every week for 20 minutes of just brutal honesty about everything in the world of sports. The NFL, obviously, we'll talk to him about that. We've got Clayton coming up at 4 o'clock. Our player spotlight at 5 will feature Gavin Heslop, who might get some time out there, Dave, because saw a picture that was tweeted by Trey Brown today. He's already undergone surgery. It's already happened. He tweeted a picture of, like, kind of from the thigh down. He looked like he was in the back of a car in a giant sort of brace on his leg and said, surgery went well.
Yeah.
So I don't imagine he's going to be back this year. And then El Hombre, about 5:10, right after our conversation with Gavin. So I don't know, man. You know, Lefko asked me right before we came on here, and we're going to get into some other stuff here that Russell and Tyler Lockett had to say. But he was asking, well, are the cornerbacks now a concern again? Because that was the big concern coming into the season. It certainly wasn't solved with Akella Witherspoon signing, and Trey Flowers didn't play well. So we remained a concern until Reed was there and Trey Brown. Then you felt like, okay, now I don't need to worry about that spot. Now they're both out. We'll see what happens with Reed. He's dealing with multiple injuries, apparently. And Brown is out, as we just talked about. So we could be seeing a game with Sidney Jones and Bless Austin, I guess, starting.
Yeah. I like what I saw out of Sidney Jones, but, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, he's a free agent and they signed him here. So, you know, we'll see. I really liked him. I really thought he was physical, and he was actually one of the guys I thought actually had a good game, him and Gerald Everett. But yeah, you know, and as you were kind of running through that, I'm going, okay, Akella Witherspoon, they signed him in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Dunlap, they signed to a deal. He has a half a sack.
Gary Hyder
has...
They re-signed Mayoa.
Yeah.
You've gotten nothing out of any of those guys.
Well, and really, I mean, look at the defense in general. Like, what are you getting out of really anybody? I mean, Bobby is a tackling machine. But, you know, he's just not a downhill... you know, player. And
not trying to be negative on him, Dave, but you've pointed out better than anybody. You have to pay it. You know, the tackle, I think the best comparison is comparing it to wins and losses for pitchers. Often they don't have a lot to do with that. You know, they can pitch terrible, still come out with a win.
Yeah.
And they can accumulate. You can have a season like Felix where he goes 13-12 and wins the Cy Young, you know? So there's, you got to look deeper than just, he's got 100 and some tackles already. Okay. Where are those happening? And did he have the opportunity to make that tackle earlier? you know, maybe 5 to 8 yards earlier than he actually did because of the way he didn't take on a block.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting the way that they're playing him, because obviously, I mean, he's been doing it all year where he will kind of back up and just try to not make contact with the guard or the tackle, whoever's trying to block him. I mean, that's just obvious to everybody. I'm not picking on him either. I think he's a great player. I always said about Bobby, he's the player I wish I was. You know, he's always around the ball.
Yeah.
You know, he gets fumbles. I think he's got 3 touchdowns. And if he gets one more, he ties Dave Brown in franchise history. Mm. You know, so he's just always been that guy. But as far as like a battering ram, no. And they're not playing him that way. He's just kind of like, you'll see him kind of retreat. He'll catch a block and then just kind of retreat and backpedal. But you know, he does make lots of tackles. And so you can't say he's not productive.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how good we felt after the first game of the season and the additions they made, whether it's Gabe Jackson on the O-line, bringing Carlos Dunlap back, signing Kerry Hyder. We got into why he was such a great opportunity for him. Anytime he's gotten a chance, he's an 8-sack guy, and it's just everything's gone the wrong direction, including the offense. And some things caught everybody's ear, caught your ear, caught my ear after this game. Tyler Lockett talking after the game. Said that, and we've got Pete's response to this, which I thought was funny. But Tyler Lockett after the game, just talking about defenses showing them a new look on the field when they play the Seahawks specifically.
Honestly, man, like all these teams is not playing what they play on film. Like they're literally not. So it's hard to be able to get ready because you don't know what you're going to get. Every time you go against a team, they might play all man to man. You know, their whole entire 7-8 games, and then they turn around and play us, and they don't play man once. You know, when you're looking at what teams are doing consistently week in and week out, nobody's doing that against us.
So he sounds a little surprised by what he was seeing defensively. And then Russell Wilson talking about, was he surprised by anything the defense showed?
I wouldn't say that, no. I think it's a little different. I think they didn't do anything surprising, to be honest with you. They play, you know, 3, they play 4, they play 6, they play 2, some every once in a while. They play a good amount of match man. Typical NFL football. They didn't do anything that was alarming or anything like that. I think that, for us, we just didn't execute on making plays.
So there's two distinct opinions there. And then Pete Carroll with the capper, when he was asked about Tyler Lockett's comments, here's his response.
Well, you're assuming that he's right, you know, and I didn't hear his comments, so I don't know what he said. So I'm not going to comment about that. But we've often seen teams over the years play us differently, you know, than they've played other teams because of the makeup of the QB, his mobility and all that. They, you know, they try to find a way to see if they can counter that. And that's always been kind of the case. So that's nothing new for us at all.
Does that not perfectly represent this offense? You got 3 different directions. I mean, I guess Pete and Russ are kind of on the same page, but you got Tyler who doesn't say it like, it seemed like they were. No, it was like definitive. Like what we saw on film isn't what we saw out there on the field. And then Russell's like, nah, well, they did a 2, a 3, a man match or whatever the heck he said there. And then Pete you're assuming he's right.
Yeah. Talking about Tyler.
Yes.
Right. So yeah. And that was, somebody asked that during the press conference yesterday and with Russ, he's the one that makes the most sense to me. If you look at those two, because, and I don't know what Cover 6 is, you know, maybe they have a nickname for some kind of coverage. But the way he runs through that. So if I'm Tyler Lockett, I'm like, okay, so you saw them playing a whole bunch of man on film. And then when they come to you, they play zone. But those are only, there's, like he said, Cover 1, there's Cover 2, there's Cover 3, there's quarters. I mean, there's only, you've seen all those before.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'd say to Locke. I'd say, well, okay, but you, when they play Cover 3, you know what Cover 3 looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the problem? Why are you confused? Yeah, it was interesting. I heard that on the postgame show, and we all were given our own answers. And I think Jordan Babineau, you know, said it best, that just like Russ, it's like, look, there's only so many coverages, you know, and it's not like somebody's reinventing the wheel when they run Cover 3. They might do something different. They might have different rules, things like that, but it's still the basic same concept. So, and also the other thing is that's always been the case. I remember every single game that I ever played in the NFL, the opponent always showed you something different. always showed you something different than what you saw on film. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, it's part of it's because I think the Seahawks are, what are they, like 72? We'll ask Clayton. I think he said they're 70. Well, he said 72.8. I'm like, okay, let's round it up, John. I think the defense is on the field 73 plays and offense only 52.
50-something, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, so they only get to so many things and there's certain situations. But I don't know, it shouldn't be surprising to Tyler Lockett, because especially for a veteran. I mean, it's one thing if you're a young guy, and again, going back to what DK Metcalf said after his rookie year, I asked him what was the most challenging thing, and he said these defenses that change during the play, not pre-snap, during the play. So, you know, there is some of that if you're a younger guy, but if you're Tyler Lockett, you've seen everything. Mm-hmm. And you pretty much know. So that was, it was kind of mysterious to me. And I still don't really know exactly what he means by that.
Yeah, even not knowing exactly what he means, it just speaks to the dysfunction, because it's clearly a polar opposite opinion to what Russell said and Pete Carroll. So, and again, it wasn't, it seemed a little different, or I'd have to go back and look at the film, but if, you know, I didn't expect to see, it was very definitive in that, teams are playing us differently than what we're seeing on film. And, you know, is there a defense that just shuts this offense down like it did last year? What was it, two deep? Is that what Pete said at the end of the year? I don't ever want to see that again. I don't want to see two deep again or whatever.
Well, that was basically because that means that in cover two you have two safeties deep, which means the run game is not a threat.
Right.
So the safety's not up in the box. So, you know, and then, I mean, and as far as deep coverages go, I think I heard somebody, I won't say, but, you know, cover two is not like a great, I mean, it's not necessarily a great deep pass protector. If you get verticals going, it's tough. What really stops the deep passing game is cover three and four, because you have three or four guys deep. Mm-hmm. Two, you only have two guys deep. So it's tough.
Splitting the field.
For the safeties. Yeah, they split it in half. So, but again, we're talking about this, and it is, there's only so many, and now again, I keep saying again, like Clayton, you know,
well, again,
you can play it so many different ways. There's no question about that, but you're still seeing the same. It's not like I said, I haven't noticed any defenses out there like, oh, wow, that's surprising. Look what they're doing defensively. No. It's not been that way, but I think you're right. When you play those three clips together, it's kind of like,
it represents what we're watching, which seems to be everybody on a different page. And how did we get here? You and I were talking about this, and you and I were looking at the box score of game one of the season. And there were questions. I remember before that game, we were spending a lot of time like, well, just because Waldron comes from the Rams offense doesn't mean it's going to look like that. He was not the offensive coordinator there. So there's no guarantee, but it might look like that. We're not sure. I mean, it was like this big, you know, it was the, you know, Christmas present. You're ready to unwrap and see what it looks like. What's underneath all the wrapping there. And you come out of that game in it's a great win. It's a 10 a.m. game, which some people still have a problem with. They feel like that's the bugaboo for this team. A road game. And it was a brand new coordinator. You had your new toys, so to speak. You know, Gabe Jackson and you had Kerry Hyder and all these people, but just seeing what it was going to look like. And you look at that box score and just offensively for a moment, Russell Wilson, incredibly efficient, 18 of 23, 254 yards and four touchdown passes. Then you look at how they did with the running. So he was 23 pass attempts. They had 27 rushing attempts in that game. And Chris Carson, 16 carries, 91 yards in that game. There was a total of 27 carries in that game for 140 yards. So they ran the ball more than they passed it. And then you look at the distribution. Five targets to Lockett, four catches. Five targets to Metcalf, four catches. Disley, three targets, three catches. Carson, three targets, three catches. Gerald Everett, two targets, two catches. I mean, it was so evenly dispersed. They were getting everybody involved. They were running and passing. There was a flow. And you look at what they did to Taylor, who's just dominating the league right now. Defensively, 17 carries, 56 yards they held him to. No touchdowns. Now he
3.3 yard average.
Yeah, and as a receiver, he had six catches for 60 yards, no touchdowns. So defensively, they did a nice job. And Wentz wasn't bad at all. 25 of 38, 251 yards and two touchdowns in that game. Mm-hmm. But it was just a game where we walked away going, wow, that was a really – remember we came in going, we were doing the good, the bad, the ugly. I'm like, I don't really have a bad and ugly to – I'm really nitpicking here. But, you know, I can't even remember what it was.
I do. It was the fact that Dixon had to pull the punt down because somebody flashed.
Is that what it was?
And then he stepped to the side. That was the worst thing. That was the worst thing that happened in that game.
So what happened? How'd they get from there to here? And the Colts are turning into a very good team. Now, maybe they weren't in rhythm yet. Maybe they were feeling their way. But you're on an even playing field. They don't know much about you at that point. You don't know much about them at that point, especially with Wentz at quarterback. There's no film. So everybody's kind of on that even playing field, finding their rhythm, seeing what they're bringing to the table.
Right.
I don't understand how that went from that to this.
Yeah, well, and maybe it's in whatever Tyler Lockett says. Maybe, I mean, does that mean that somebody has found, like, the magic elixir to thwart this offense? I mean, is it some kind of a pattern? Are they taking something away? I don't know. Yeah, it's been and also you look at Russ and the way he's come back from this thing, he still looks like he's kind of confused and doesn't really know where to go with the ball.
Right.
So
the offense didn't look great before he got hurt, though. In between this game and the time that Russell got hurt, the offense was having problems.
Yeah, well, they had problems in Minnesota. And then, you know, the other thing is, I think that was Mark Schlereth that said something about Russell being the guy that covers up all the warts.
Mm-hmm.
And remember in the San Francisco game, and they won that one, what, 28-21, I think, there was two spectacular plays made by Russell Wilson that were entirely outside of the offense operating. It was Russ making a play. And that's where you go, uh-oh. And then he gets hurt. The game next game, you're like, okay, that's not available to you anymore.
Right.
So yeah, it's been, and really remember after the discussion after the Indy game was that, well, I guess Pete was right, because remember he told us we found out last year we didn't need the preseason in order to play effectively because they came out smoking last year, the mm-hmm. offense did, and boy, it just has taken a turn for the worse. And look, remember the very next game against the Titans. That was the one where Pete afterwards said, yeah, Russ could have helped us out.
Yeah,
because
that's right.
he took deep shots in that Indy game.
Instead of taking what the defense was giving him.
Yeah, and there was a couple of times where the checkdowns were there. But I guess I would go back to, and I the older I get, the more I side with the coaches. Because I'm like, okay, you can put the stuff in. You can tell the guys only so many times before it's like, okay, you got to execute it. So I would say, but it is. It's on the coaches. So you either, it's one of two things. You either make it simple and make it so, and if Russ can't understand it and he's confused, I'm thinking everybody would be. Because mm-hmm. Russ is one of the most brilliant quarterbacks in the league. That's why he's a top five quarterback. So it's either that, you know, so this goes on the coaches. It's either you need to explain that better or you need to get the next guy in there. Because, and I'm not talking about Russ, but I'm talking about, like, certain things that are going on this team. You know, if guys aren't playing hard and they're not, you know, you're giving them the tools to go out there and have success and they're not playing hard, then you need to replace them. I mean, somebody was talking about how, oh, the defense is so gassed. Well, get them out of there. Get, you know, whoever, if it's Bobby Wagner who's running 100% of the snaps and he looks gassed, put the next best guy in there. Nick Ballore is going to be better fresh than Bobby just entirely gassed. I mean, at least right. give him a couple reps. So, I mean, yeah, that's what falls on the coaches. And I'm not saying anything. I'm not pointing the finger or anything. Every coach knows this in the NFL, going back to Chuck Knox. It's like, this is on me. But then he would turn around and go, but I'm going to fix it. And like I said, there was a time where he came up to me before a game and he said, hey, listen, you keep playing like you're playing, you're going to be standing next to me on the sidelines. And I didn't get a lot of sleep that night, not before a game. But but that's the way it has to be. And so that's one of two things needs to happen. Either you explain things so players like Russell Wilson can understand it, or you get the next best guy in there.
Boy, the problem is if they take that approach with these players and say, you're going to be standing next to me, you're going to have like four people on the field. You're not going to have enough people out there. One thing that did remain consistent in looking at this box score, Dave, is the time of possession. The Colts dominated in that game, 35-47 to 24-13. So that started in week one, even in a day where we looked at it and said, wow, that was a really complete effort. They were losing that time of possession battle right there in that game. So consistency is key in everything. All right, let's take two.
Now, two very interesting Seahawks-related things. First one, Seahawks 49ers officially flexed out of Sunday Night Football, supposed to be on December 5th. Now back to the more traditional 1:25 kickoff. Broncos and Chiefs are in primetime. And something that just happened about 15 minutes ago, Golden Tate signed the Tennessee Titans practice squad.
Really? I forgot all about Golden Tate.
Yeah, me too. I saw that.
Golden was one of the guys that we regretted when he left.
Yes.
We're like, yeah, that guy could have. I really loved the way he played.
He played with an attitude.
He did.
He played like a running back. The second the ball was in his hands, he was looking to hit somebody or run somebody over.
Yeah, he was like beast mode once he got him the ball. If you'd have told us 6 years ago that the Niner Seattle Seahawk game is going to get flexed out, you'd be like, huh? What happened?
Least surprising thing ever, though, right? They're in prime time on Monday night coming up against Washington. 3-7. They could be 3-8 after that game. I mean, there's nothing appealing about the idea of running that game on Sunday Night Football primetime.
It's pretty – I mean, the other night it was – well, Monday night, I guess it was the Giants and Tampa Bay. The days are so long right now.
Yesterday.
Like, was that yesterday?
Yeah.
The other night. Last night.
But, I mean, yeah, that's like the Giants being on Monday Night Football against Tampa. I mean, yeah, and it's Washington, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough going back there.
I also just saw that the Titans waived Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, you can only have a certain amount of 2012 superstars in your roster at one time. So they had to get rid of him. So we don't talk much college basketball right now, but it's a major week for the sport, including Gonzaga. Number one versus number two tonight. Gonzaga and UCLA meet in a Final Four rematch in Las Vegas tonight. And then the Zags are in Vegas all week. Next up, on Friday, they'll take on a top 10 Duke team featuring McDonald's All-American and Seattle native Paolo Banchero Friday in Vegas.
Are you fired up? Nobody loves college basketball more than Dave Wyman.
I'm trying to get back into it, Bob.
You obviously spend the majority of the time talking about the Seahawks, the Mariners, NFL, but it's funny the texts we used to get from you. I'm watching San Francisco State right now, and this guy looks just like you. And I'm like, wait, it's not about the picture. You're watching who?
Yeah.
San Francisco State or whatever. Schools I've never even heard of. I mean, that's a diehard.
Yeah, that was a whack team, right?
I didn't know there was such a thing as San Francisco State.
Yeah, I mean, I love college basketball. I'm trying to get back into it, much like football. I mean, I just like seeing some dominant teams on the West Coast, you know, and it's the same thing in football. I really enjoyed the Utah-Oregon game the other day in football, and the Pac-12 is, I'm a West Coast guy.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's, I don't really care that much about, like, SEC, you know. And so nice to see the Zags back. It's amazing what Mark Few has done out there because
it's remarkable.
It's out in the middle of nowhere. Gonzaga is a great school, trust me. And I love the middle of nowhere. Trust me, Spokane. Yeah. I love Spokane. But, I mean, for recruits and getting guys to come out there, it's pretty remarkable.
Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberknifeProstate. Coming up, is it back to square one for a Seahawks position group that had shown signs of improvement? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, Mark Schlereth will join us on the program. So stay tuned for that conversation. I got to ask him about something here, Dave, because I'm almost embarrassed to admit this. A texter just informed me, and you guys can text in 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. I don't know if you knew this. I'm really sort of embarrassed. Everyone knows week one doesn't count. Has almost zero bearing on what your team will be that season. I didn't realize it didn't count in the schedule. So do they get like a half a win? Are they really like 2.5-7 right now?
Yeah, what a genius.
That was interesting.
Are you embarrassed, Bob?
I feel
for having not known that.
After
this guy
all
could
of these
do
years.
Your job. You know that?
Yeah. I'm going to ask, do you think Schlereth knew? Did you know week one? Everybody knows. Doesn't really count. What the hell are you talking about?
Well, I don't think you're listening, because what's ironic about it is that week one, when they had the least amount of this offense, you know, being run, I mean, they did it in camp. They didn't do it together in the preseason. And now, you know, the very best game was the very first one when they were the least practiced, the least reps. So I'm embarrassed, Bob, that apparently out there in the metropolitan area of Gonzaga University, which is Spokane, 320,000 people, not exactly in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But nationally?
Yeah.
Come on. Do most people know when, if you're on the East Coast and you name the cities in Washington, do you think you're saying Spokane?
No.
No.
No, you're not. You're not. We know it. We live here. We're very. It's like any other city does. But yeah, on the other side of the country, no. Come on. But I do appreciate the assistance from the text, and hopefully that person helped educate everybody else that was listening. For all of you listening now, all of you probably already knew this, but week one doesn't really count. Okay, so it is still a 16-game season on top of that. All right, moving on, and we touched on this earlier, that the cornerback position coming into the season seemed to universally be the biggest area of concern. There were needs in different areas. You know, the O-line had a spot, the D-line, you know, there were certainly other needs, but the most pressing, the least amount of confidence.
Least settled.
Yeah, was that cornerback spot. We liked Reed, but I got to say this about Reed, but the only knock on him was his availability. That was the knock on him in San Francisco. He got hurt his first year here with the Seahawks. Now he's dealing with injuries again. But you like who he is when he's healthy. That's what we kept talking about. When he's there, when he's healthy, we like him. We have no idea what Witherspoon's going to bring to the table. He was benched in San Francisco. He was hurt a lot in San Francisco. What's he going to be here? Well, he was a whole lot of nothing. So that didn't work. Trey Flowers didn't work. And then you finally got two guys out there, a healthy Reed and Trey Brown, and we finally were like, okay, now we're rolling. Now we feel good about things. Trey Brown suffers that injury in the game, as I told you earlier, in case you guys just tuned in. He's already had surgery. The interesting thing was hearing Pete Carroll talk about it yesterday as if it slipped, but he wasn't supposed to say anything. This was weird.
He's going
to
get surgery, yes. Okay, Trey Brown. Well, I don't know why that. Yes. Yeah,
So he's done for the year.
I guess, yeah, if that's what has to take place and it follows through, like this is just the day after, so it looks like surgery is imminent, yeah, and so he would be.
Okay. If that's what has to take place and it follows through, it's like I feel like he wasn't certain if he should be saying anything about that, was trying to maybe just talk around it, but yeah, Trey Brown's already had surgery, tweeted out, or maybe it was from his Instagram page, a picture of his leg with a brace on it and saying surgery went well.
Right. Well, and early on, the way he said that, and it did need clarification, because everybody was like, whoa, wait, because I actually had my microphone on like an idiot. And when it started, and I was like, wait, Trey Brown, what? And I looked at you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what did he just say? Because in the very beginning, he's just all of a sudden threw that out there. The last we heard is that they're going to take a look at it. And it was all of a sudden like, oh, he's having surgery or had surgery.
Yeah, yeah, it was in the flow of a sentence. Like, yeah, you know, he's going to, you know, get some opinions on it. And we're going to, you know, do what we need to do best. You know, hopefully, you know, get that operated on. And then he moved on.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Wait, did you say operated on?
Right. So there was some clarification there. I know Pete's got a lot on his mind. And, I mean, you know, it's funny as you ask Clayton about this stuff, because doesn't it seem like, you know, you just mentioned it, all the things you go through, you finally get to, you're settled at corner. And then there's injuries.
Yeah.
But John says that the Seahawks have had like the least, they're in the top 5 or 10 as far as healthiest teams, meaning starters who missed a start because of injury. And you know, it just seems like, it feels like to me that they've been kind of snake bit this year, especially losing Russ.
And then Carson
for three
as
games.
Well.
But Carson, and then now this, it's just. Ben Burkervin, not a starter, but I don't know. It just felt like that, and yet he says, and we'll ask him at 4 o'clock, that it's actually not the case. There's other teams. I think it's the Baltimore Ravens that have the most starts missed by starters.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, but this one just kind of hurt because you finally got it together.
Yeah.
Like it was pretty obvious that there were – did you see anything from Trey Brown that you're like, oh, yeah, he's a rookie. Oh, that was a big mistake.
I think he had a penalty called on him, but, I mean, that's the nature of that position. I mean, that's not a rookie penalty. It's a penalty. It's
cost
what
of doing business.
Yeah, that's what happens. I like his physicality. No, to answer your question, no, I haven't seen anything where you go, yeah, there's that learning curve. He's going to – he'll get it figured out. No, to this point, through what did we say, 4.5 games – he's looked fantastic. You kind of forgot he was a rookie, to be honest. He's just playing that well. And then Pete giving a little update on DJ Reed.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the updates on DJ at this point, but we'll surely look to get him back soon. He did not have a severe injury, but he did have a setback. Sydney did a nice job yesterday. He played a good football game and made some nice plays and came through for us in some nice spots. Bless was the first time we got a chance to see him, and so he survived. He had one play where he stumbled, but other than that, he was pretty solid for his first time out. And John Reed's available to us too, to help us when we need him.
He survived. Bless survived. Had the one play where he stumbled. Brought up Reed. Didn't bring up our guy we're going to speak to today, Heslop, Gavin Heslop, who will join us at 5 o'clock for our player spotlight. He was activated prior to this game, so he was there and played some special teams, but he's ready to go.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I remember last year, and I asked him about it, but it was Miami. I remember that being a huge surprise because they were without Jamal Adams already. I can't remember who it was, but yeah, they brought Heslop up, who, by the way, played for Jessamyn McIntyre's dad at Stony Brook. Yeah.
Yep.
So, it's unsettling when – and corner was tough there for a while. I looked, by the way, really quick before we go to break. Akilah Witherspoon has played 24 snaps this year with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Wow.
And has two tackles.
That's quite an investment that's been paid off. That just did not work out well. And I guess we see why he got benched in San Francisco. I mean, he couldn't find time here.
Wasn't he the guy that said – I think I'm the best.
When I'm healthy, I'm the best. Because it was a combo. He got benched, and then he was dealing with injuries. So there were reasons he wasn't playing, multiple reasons. And then, yeah, said when he's healthy, he's the best corner in the league. So maybe he's just not healthy right now. All right, coming up, Jerry DePoto might try to interrupt your Thanksgiving plans. Tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour, Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Mark Schlereth will join us at the top of the hour. That is Can't Miss Radio. You never want to miss that conversation. You don't know where he's going to go, but you know it'll be 100% honest. Whatever he's talking about, it's going to be an unvarnished opinion.
He's one of those guys, too, that can say whatever he thinks and he doesn't get himself in trouble.
He's kind of getting into that Barkley territory of that. Not that he's the same profile athlete. I mean, Barkley's a Hall of Famer, with all due respect to Stink.
Sure.
But he is that guy where I think the more people are aware of him, you kind of accept that that's who he is. He's going to tell you 1,000% exactly what he thinks of you, your situation, your team. And as he said, we were talking about the Aaron Rodgers thing the day you were gone, you were on vacation, where he kind of ripped Rodgers apart, but prefaced it with, hey, he's a friend of mine. He's a good friend of mine. And hopefully after this, he'll still be a friend. But he said, if he's going to be mad at me for being honest with him, then I'm a better friend to him than he is to me.
It's funny. I texted him some videos of a certain player and a couple, three of them and making my comments and everything. And he goes, you hate him, and I love it.
All right. You can't wait for it. It's coming up at the top of the hour, so stay tuned. Meanwhile, we talked about Jerry DePoto potentially disrupting your Thanksgiving plans because he's got a history of making moves close to Thanksgiving or on the day before Thanksgiving. I'm just wondering if there's going to be more urgency this year because of the impending lockout, the impending work stoppage, which would take place on December 2nd. So I'm wondering if they're
trying to beat that deadline.
Well, if there's I would just love to hear them behind the scenes, like if they think, hey, we got to get a deal done, or do they feel like, you know what, most people aren't going to get these deals done prior to then, so let's wait till after. We don't want to rush and overpay trying to get in before the deadline. Once hopefully everything gets rectified and they come to an agreement, everybody, there's labor peace, then we'll jump in and the prices will be more. I'm wondering what the philosophy is.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm thinking if I'm an agent, you want to create a sense of urgency, right?
Yeah.
And you create that sense of urgency with that impending date. And then, yeah, use it to – I think the owners or the GMs that are going to be – that are going to come out of this the best won't worry about that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I feel like there's going to be some people overpaying for it. But we'll see. I mean, on the other hand, they also – you know, I think everybody wants them to see – they want to see them be very aggressive.
Yep.
Yep. And we talked about like the trade deadline next year. There's still that. There's still plenty of time. But I think most Mariner fans are going to be kind of unsettled until, especially knowing Kyle Seager's not going to be there. And you know, I feel like they just want to know
yeah.
that they are signing guys and that they're very serious about it.
Yeah, and just as a reminder, back in 2016, day before Thanksgiving, Mariners traded Taijuan Walker and Ketel Marte to the Diamondbacks for Mitch Haniger and Gene Segura, yeah. which is a trade that worked out really well in terms of both players you got in return. Ketel Marte initially got sent down to the minors. He was there with the big club for a little bit in Arizona, and it wasn't working out that well, got sent to the minors. He was a shortstop here. They call him back up. All of a sudden, he's a power-hitting center fielder for the Diamondbacks. And so that ended up working out well for him. But
was Marte a shortstop here?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember, I don't pay attention, the Arizona Diamondbacks were horrible mm-hmm. this year. But, yeah, all of a sudden, like you said, he's a power hitter?
Power-hitting outfielder. Yeah. It, good for him. Good for him. But, I mean, Gene Segura came over and did what he was. Now he became a problem in the clubhouse eventually, but yeah. he was an all-star. He was a guy who led the National League in hits the year before, and he was a hit machine here. And obviously, we know about Mitch Haniger. Now, injuries have been a problem, but he's one of your most complete player currently on the roster. So, yeah, that's one of those kind of win-win trades. But I'm just curious to see what their mindset is. Not even just the Mariners, just most teams. I'm wondering if they're reluctant to do anything, if they're like, hey, let's hang on and wait till after we get this whole work stoppage figured out. Now, you've seen some deals. What was the number on Wander Franco? Was it $225 million over 12 years?
Yeah, 11-year extension, 12-year player option.
He hasn't even played a full season.
Yeah,
he's 20 years old, Dave.
Jeez.
He's 20 years old. He's not played a full season of Major League Baseball, and he's now locked up for 12 years over $200 million. There's a bet. We are betting he is going to be, and he looks like it. He looks like it, but if he, for whatever reason, face plants, just can't find it, fades, whatever. He's getting every last dime of that deal. And then
you sign a guy to a deal like that, wouldn't you be tempted to suggest that if you're an owner, like, I'm just going to make a suggestion, but I would like to have a 24-hour-a-day bodyguard follow you around and make sure you don't get in trouble.
Yeah, you stay away from, you know, three-wheelers and motorcycles. Yeah, skiing, maybe even pick up basketball. I'd like you to just sit in your house. We'll bring you all the entertainment. We'll get you a 100-inch TV, the top of the line. We'll get you the best couch in the world. We'll keep you stocked with refreshments in there. We'll bring people to your house. You don't have to drive anywhere. Yeah, that's a huge investment. 12-year deal with Wander Franco, over $200 million for a 20-year-old kid who has yet to play a full season. And then a name we're all familiar with out here, Kendall Graveman, signs with the White Sox, 3 years, $24 million. Good for him.
Yeah.
I'm not mad that the Mariners weren't in on that or that. Why didn't the Mariners do that? We've talked about bullpens. We've talked about these guys who find it 1 year and for whatever reason, the next year it's not there. And if you look at his history, I mean, he was phenomenal with his team. There was no part of me that wanted him to leave. But you look at his history, he hasn't always been that guy. So I think it's fair to question, is he this guy now moving forward? That's who he's going to be? Or is he going to be like the majority of bullpen guys who – they flash for a year, maybe two, and for whatever reason, they can't find the strike zone or they're getting lit up. It's a really uncertain spot on a roster, a reliever. So a massive investment in a reliever. I'm not that mad that the Mariners, you know, weren't in the bidding. And maybe they were to a point. Who knows where they were. But $24
million? Well, in these other contracts, it makes this look kind of cheap. He's getting $8 million a year, but... Yeah, I'm so interested to see how this bullpen performs next year because, like we always talk about, it just a year-to-year thing. Was it 16 or 17? They only had two different guys, and they went from the best bullpen to
one
the worst.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. It is. They're kind of like running backs in the NFL. They'll flash for a year or two, and then production just falls off the cliff. Now at least it makes sense with a running back. They're just taking a beating over and over. Sometimes you can't explain why a guy dominates out of the bullpen one year, and all of a sudden guys are just teeing off on him the next year.
Right.
It seems to be the nature of that spot. But good for Kendall Graveman. So 3-year deal with the White Sox, $24 million for Kendall Graveman. All right, coming up, nothing like some pre-Thanksgiving stink is left go. Look at him. He's trying not to look. You see his face?
Pleased with himself.
You can see when he's proud of his teases. You can just see when he's like, I can't wait till he reads this.
I kind of like that one, though.
It is followed with, to get you ready for a big meal. Pre-Thanksgiving stink to get you ready for a big meal.
Well, it incorporates his the farting on the plane and the food.
It's
and
an all-encompassing tease.
This is Mike Lefko right here in one sentence.
Mark Schlereth joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.